Even if I am a machine, suppose science eventually accounts for every thought I have ever had. A scan finds the neural event behind prayer, the chemical shift within love, the memory circuit involved in grief, and the bodily conditions that produce awe. Many people would receive this as a demolition of the human mystery. Once the mechanism had been exposed, they would feel cheated, as though an experience were valuable only while its cause remained concealed. I find this reasoning flawed. An explanation changes what I know about an experience while leaving its occurrence intact. Pain can be traced through nerves and brain regions. It still hurts. Vision can be described through photons, retinas, and neural processing. The face in front of me remains visible. Affection has chemistry, yet nobody who has loved well mistakes a chemical account for the whole meaning of devotion. Biochemistry has acquired a strangely insulting reputation, as though a feeling loses its dignity the moment we learn how the body carries it. Why should knowing how something reaches me make it smaller? Every reality I have ever known has passed through my condition as a human being. The ordinary world arrives through sensation and is assembled in consciousness. So does everything extraordinary. Even the God of the Bible, fully real and independent of me, would still be encountered through my nervous system. A prayer heard by God would first exist as thought, emotion, breath, and bodily sensation within the person praying. Divine contact would have a neural signature because a living brain participated in it. Of course it did. This is where people often make an unjustified leap. They move from the experience happened in the brain to the brain invented its object. Yet every encounter happens in the brain. The tree outside my window produces an internal experience of color and form. Its neural basis gives me no reason to dismiss the tree. If a person felt the presence of God, a scan could tell us which parts of the brain were active. By itself, that information leaves the source undecided. The experience may have been prompted by an external reality, generated entirely within the organism, or produced through some relation between the two that our current categories fail to describe. The scan cannot settle metaphysics. It can show how a human being received the event. Suppose the harder materialist conclusion proved correct. No deity exists outside us. Every spiritual experience arose from the activity of living tissue shaped by evolution, culture, memory, fear, love, and the need for meaning. Why would that discovery turn beauty into fraud? Awe still occurred. The person who felt forgiven may have changed his life. Someone standing before the ocean may have sensed a unity so complete that his usual self-concern briefly loosened. Those events had causes, as all events do. Yet their effects were real in the lives that followed. Origin and value answer different questions. Evolution may explain how the capacity for spiritual feeling developed. That account leaves its worth open. Hunger has an evolutionary history. Food can still be exquisite. Attachment serves survival and reproduction. Love can exceed those functions in ways the original biological account never predicts in detail. Consciousness may arise from matter, yet the fact that matter can feel sorrow, imagine eternity, and care about truth is hardly a cheap result. Perhaps the insult lies in our idea of a machine. We picture something vacant, repetitive, and disposable, a device that follows instructions without inward life. Then we apply the term to ourselves and recoil from the ugliness we placed inside it. But a biological machine, if that is what I am, can know that it exists. It can examine its own causes, refuse some impulses, cultivate others, create meaning, and wonder whether its maker is real. Calling such a being a machine may expose the poverty of the comparison more than the poverty of the being. A simulated existence would change even less for me. If I learned tomorrow that my body and world were computations inside a system beyond my reach, my metaphysical address would change. The life being lived there would remain mine. Pain would still give me reason to protect another person. Love would retain its intimacy. A beautiful morning would continue to alter my state as I stood inside it. The substrate could be code, cells, divine thought, or some material we lack the intelligence to conceive. My access to reality would remain what it has always been, experience from within a particular form. People sometimes treat real as a privilege reserved for the final layer of existence. By that standard, almost everything we care about waits for metaphysics to certify it. yet lived consequences already separate fantasy from irrelevance. A friendship between simulated beings could still contain trust and betrayal. Suffering inside that world would matter to the one enduring it. Its ultimate composition would tell us what the world is made of. It would never erase what happened there. The soul may also survive a physical account more easily than people assume. We have burdened the idea by requiring it to exist as an invisible passenger, complete in itself and temporarily housed in flesh. Perhaps soul names the full inward depth of a living being, the continuity of memory, conscience, desire, attention, and self-awareness made possible through the body. Under that definition, locating these capacities in biology discovers their mode of existence. It takes nothing away from their importance. There is a frightening side to this. Brain injury can alter temperament. Dementia can take apart a personality that took decades to form. Drugs, hormones, exhaustion, disease, and anesthesia can change or suspend consciousness. These facts remove the fantasy that the mind stands safely apart from the flesh. Our inward lives are vulnerable because our bodies are vulnerable. Dependence need carry no humiliation. It gives care greater consequence. If thought relies on blood flow and memory on living tissue, then sleep, nourishment, touch, medicine, and protection participate in the preservation of a person. The physical basis of consciousness can deepen reverence for life because damage is easier than restoration, and each individual arrangement disappears when the organism dies. A soul guaranteed to survive every injury may invite abstraction. A mind bound to a mortal body asks for attention now. I have no interest in a God preserved through deliberate ignorance, nor atheism adopted as a pose of intellectual superiority. Either position can serve fear. One person needs eternal protection, another needs to feel too intelligent for belief. Honest inquiry owes loyalty to neither defense against uncertainty. The conclusion matters, though perhaps less than the quality of mind brought to it. Evidence can revise me. Uncertainty can remain unresolved without sending me toward a convenient fiction. If God exists, honest inquiry would hardly threaten him. If divinity lives entirely within the human organism, then reason helps me understand the conditions under which that presence is felt. In both cases, truth gives the experience a cleaner foundation because I am no longer asking belief to protect me from what I might discover. Perhaps I am matter learning to experience itself. Perhaps something greater reaches me through this animal form. I can live with either possibility, and with the space between them. Whatever the final account says, beauty has already occurred here. I have loved, I have felt wonder. At times I have sensed a sacred character in nature, consciousness, and existence itself. A complete explanation of how those states arose would leave the events in place. If I am a machine, then it is beautiful and magical to be this one.